Hi there. I'm Supernova, and well, you can call me Nova, whatever you prefer. And this is my find project. Okay, so a little bit about me before we start. Hi there. I'm a full stack software engineer at a pharmaceutical company. I make most of the internal software used for distribution of their products. I've tried quite a few programming languages and am proficient JavaScript, TypeScript, and PHP. I can mention a few others, but I take up way too much of your time. If you've heard of me, you might know me from my more popular projects like Annan Upload and ChangeRAR. However, I also have a bunch of other projects on my GitHub if you'd like to poke around and see what I've been up to. I'm quite active, which is great. Like, for example, if you wanted to keep track of your GitHub history, have like a kind of streak to motivate you to get out there and stop having a block productivity blocker, you can check out GitStreet. Alright, so why I used Vine. Admittedly, I am new to Golang, and it's really fun to try new things. So this is actually my first Go project. I'm pretty impressed. Well, it's actually a lie, it's not my first Go project. Well, this is my first Create Go project, yes. However, my first Go project was basically I did Hello World, and then I test out some buttons in Fine, and then I had an idea, and I put it to market, and I made this thing. I usually make apps with Electron, but I want to try out a few other alternatives. So I installed Go and looked around. I found Fine and Wales, and well, I liked Wales. It was way too similar to Electron to me, so I went with Fine. Fine has a wonderful design system, big community base, and if you join the social server, someone won't hesitate to help you out. What is the purpose of the app? The app I made is to help a fellow friend of mine solve a problem. They use Firebot for their Twitch stream and wanted a way to offer Blackjack as a game. What this does is do exactly that. It's integrated nicely with Firebot's APIs, Twitch, and even offers a web overlay. Admittedly, I ran into a few roadblocks. I'm not perfect, and some folks on the Fine Discord helped me come to some conclusions. That's why there's a few extras bundled to make everything work nicely. What are the extras? Okay, I mentioned some extras. What are they? Well, I had to implement a licensing system that allowed me to have some secret variables and make everything work together nicely. Luckily for you, I have that in the works. The plan was to have it out by the time I finished recording this, but work gets in the way of my own schedule, so I like to be. As mentioned previously, check out my GitHub and it might be there someday, which would be pretty great for you. Alright, demo time. I've talked for quite a bit. Now it's time for me to demonstrate everything. And if you'd like to play around with it yourself, DM me on Discord at superdev.one with a screenshot of your conference ticket. I'll send you a build and a free license so you can use it. Alright, so let's do demo. Yeah. So that's the wrong one. Here we go. So this is our Fine project. Basically, we have a player queue. Players can add their names. So for example, I have the Twitch bot running right now. So I'm gonna type slash join, and that's gonna put me in the queue as you can see here. And now what I'm gonna do is it's gonna be on our turn, and I'm gonna do stand because I have a score of 17. Right. And what this is gonna do is it's gonna cycle through the whole game, and I won as I have 17, the dealer has 22. Great. And also reset the game and pause the game if you'd like, which is basically like it's like pausing the queue. Kind of fun. Yeah. So we have some settings, their licensing stuff, have the whole Twitch bot there, got our server, got some display stuff, we've changed your card backing, you can do that. Developer mode, game rules, you know your blackjack rules, have some Firebot configuration, so you can set up your gems in that. This is our player queue, as you can see earlier. Have our players in queue, have some settings, have some analytics for our session turnover rate, all that stuff. History for our bulk count, and we have a debug menu here. As you can see, this tracks all of our events, and all of our console logs are filtered here. Pretty cool. Yeah. Okay, so let's switch over. Let's just show the code. Yeah. Talk a little about the code. So as you can see, I have the bot up here for some of our commands, which we have our queue hitting, standing, double, splitting, betting, And then there's some rule commands, help commands, some of our event stuff, moderator checks. There's a bunch of code here, which keeps configs, our assets, as you can see here. Have some web stuff here. Basically, all of our web overlay would go here, and they want to get it working, but OBS sucks, and it does not want to work, which is unfortunate. But it looks quite great. It interfaces nicely, has a bunch of animations, all the works. Now, unfortunately, that's all I have time for. I hope you like what I made. See ya!
Hey, my name's Hayden, and for the last couple of years, I have been working on a chat app called Bounce, and I've been using Fine to write the UI. So I want to take a few minutes to talk about some of the custom widgets I've been working on and other things I've come across, et cetera. So let's get into it. This is what the user interface looks like. It's like most other chat applications. On the left, you can select your threads, which are groups or direct messages, and then in the right there, you can see your chat history. And that's the first widget that I want to talk about right here. So this is a fork of widget.list that I call chat history, and it's the place where you can scroll through all of the history, so messages, status changes, stuff like that. There's a few things I removed from widget.list, so the selection, hovering, the separators, stuff like that. But the most important change I made is to automatically set the item heights. So widget.list allows you to set different heights for items manually. And in my widget, when you add items, they have their height set. And when you go to refresh items as you're like scrolling around, it sets their height. This was a bit tricky. In order for scrolling to be smooth, I found that the heights have to be set for every item in the entire list. And what that means is when starting up the application, you would have to compute the height of everything that's going to be put in the list, which is very expensive and time-consuming. So what I'm doing for now is just caching all of the heights into a really simple structure on disk, and that is totally snappy. So when I start up the application, it unloads that and everything's just in there. But in the future, what I would like to do is find a way to keep scrolling smooth and discover the heights sort of as I get close to scrolling to the widgets that are in the list. And right now I haven't found a way to do that. Things are still a little jumpy. I think it can be done. The cost of that would be that the scroll bar size wouldn't always be perfectly accurate, but that's fine. The other thing I did in this chat history widget is I check when the offset is updated, when a scroll occurs. I check if a widget is fully visible for the first time, and then I'm able to fire a callback from there so I can tell if something has been read. And this is how I do read receipts. The chat bubbles are another important custom widget. Here you can see one where there is both text and images and also files or a file. And this is cool. A lot of work went into setting this up right. The images, as you can see, are pretty compressed. I do that for performance reasons. But when you click on them, it opens like a full-size image viewer and you can scroll through. I haven't gotten gestures yet, but you can click on the left and right. And when you go to add files, there's another custom widget for that. I call it a pending message attachment. You can see at the bottom, I've added a couple images and a file, and you can remove them, see their size. If there's a lot of them, you can scroll, et cetera. So that is cool. Another part of these chat bubbles is what I call merge mode. So if the same author has written a bunch of messages around the same time, you don't need to put the like timestamp and disappearing icon, et cetera, on every single bubble. So you put the name only on the top for the incoming ones, and then you put the sort of decoration icons only on the bottom one. I wrote here, merge mode makes things easy. It does not. that was not the easiest thing, but it does make them easier to read. Last thing I want to call out, it's a nice little piece of polish here, is you can see those status icons will sort of scoot up if the line wrapping allows for extra space there. So you can see in that top example, it doesn't, and the icons are on a new line. And in the example below that, it's wrapped in a way such that there's a little room, and so it scoots them up. So for this, I had to use measure text to measure each word with the white space after it. And then as I wrap, I am able to measure how much space there is. And it was a little touchy to get that right. But I think those little pieces of polish make things feel a lot better. Works on mobile. Here are some screenshots from Android. There was a lot I had to do to change some of the flows here. So there's a lot of like current device is mobile checks, and then you know I do things a little differently. So viewing all of the threads is one screen, and then when you click on a thread, the whole main window gets replaced with the thread history, and there's a back button that doesn't exist on desktop. So things like that. But it works really well. When I originally started, Android performance was unusable. It was terribly laggy. And some of that was my fault. Some of that was a lack of optimization in Fine. But especially recently, the Android performance has gotten a lot better. And that's really motivating to see. So that's that. Let's see. The 2.6 migration was a bit rough. And I'm not totally done with it. I'm still using a lot of do and wait. There's a few reasons for that. There are times in my application where I want to do two things in a row. For example, I want to display a new message, but then I also want to update the icons and mark it as delivered, sometimes back to back. And both of those are calls that need to be wrapped in fine.do. But the second one depends on the first one, and I'd have to change my API around a lot between the user interface code and the actual chat code to be able to do those at the same time. So there have been a lot of places where do and wait has come in handy, and I know that's not ideal. There are some places where I've also mixed in the actual widget stuff with my state, and in hindsight, I would have done things a little different there. But it's tough because, for example, when I'm doing the height check stuff to know if I like should be auto-scrolling or if something's been read or things like that, but there's times where I do want to sort of get feedback from Fine about how things are set up and displayed to know what I'm doing with state. And a lot of that has involved blocking stuff. So I'm still kind of in the weeds on this one. Everything's working great, but there's a lot of do and wait calls that probably... if things were set up a little different, could be fine.do calls. So that is something that I want to do in the future. The last thing I'll mention with my time here is that I have been working on camera support for Android, and I did get the intent technique. So mediastore.captureImageIntent takes you to the camera app and back. I got that working pretty cleanly. However, that does not work on all devices. It's a very out-of-date way to do things in Android, and it just wasn't really viable to get that merged into Fine. So this photo here is a success I've had building with the Android X, Camera X toolkit, which was a bit crazy to get that all built into the DeX, but it worked. I was able to take a photo, and you can see that here. And that photo is actually of the Logcat output of the application showing it's using Camera X. So there's a lot between here and getting something merged in, but I hope to keep working on this. And that is about it for me. So thanks, Andy, and the rest of the Fine team for putting together this awesome project that has made my work possible. And I look forward to what's next. Thank you.
A while ago, I actually had a small experimental fun project where I was implementing a chat and internet radio station application, because they had a web-based thing, and I was just curious how it would look like in Fine. And what I was using there, they were having support for animated GIFs that could go over the screen and stuff. In that context, I was using not videos, but at least animated graphics within Fine already. And that worked, but it wasn't super performant. So when I then started having a new client who's working in the transport industry who relies on video or camera signals because they have a driving assistance software, when you go backwards or left or right, there's a controller on the vehicle, and that controller is being read, and then based on that the camera pops up and shows either left right, or the backward signal. So this is what I first needed to figure out if it's doable anyway. So before, similar to Tanvi, I first had to check, can I do this? And I did some very early experimentation, and I actually got it working. The project that I ported, that's going to be a different talk, how I ported something from Java to Fine, but for now, just the video stuff, they were using GStreamer to do that on Java, which is in itself already a really complex piece of software with a lot of components and moving parts, and making that all work turned out more tricky than I expected. Well, maybe I did expect it because it's video, but I didn't know about it. So in the scope of this project, I really had to dive deep and learn all those things, and I probably still don't know everything, got things wrong, and I managed to develop a prototype for my client though, and they're happy, and we're going forward with that in the future, I hope. And here I have the very boiled down example that I also put on the repository, which is, I forgot to add the link actually, but it's right there, so on the code book there, you see where the code is. It's not very clean, it's really in a prototype-ish state so far, with still lock codes in it, it needs to be cleaned up, but this is the starting point that's actually working. And it's working so well, this is actually working. Like, I had four videos playing at the same time, and they're smooth. This is really smooth. In fact, you see at the top there it's saying frame rate is 25/1, which limits the frame rate of the videos, otherwise they would play too fast, which is part of the complexity of the whole video pipeline thing. But the thing is, it's working, like, in Fine. And the way I've achieved that was initially by serializing, like, In GStreamer, you can say what the output format is. So I said, oh, they have PNG. And, well, yeah, I know Fine can handle PNG. So obviously that was the first naive way to go. It worked, but it was a bit stuttery. It wasn't really fast enough yet. So, but it was good enough at least, like, okay, with this I can work. And I started. And at a later point, I started looking into the formats. First looking into Go, what image formats are supported. And while going through the list, I saw RGBA and saw that a GStreamer as well, so I put that in the pipeline. Format is RGBA. So that was compatible, and all I have to do after that point is then mapping the memory into Go scope, and from there I can just copy it directly into the Go image and then hand it off to Fine, and it's actually working. This is not official though, like, this is really, as I said, experimental state, and at this point I don't know how to bring it forward because it's really heavy with GStreamer, like from a licensing perspective, would mean that we need to, that we cannot integrate it like this into Fine itself, it would have to be something external in order to address the licensing issues. Anyone who used Video Codex probably knows that you need to install that separately and so on. So if we could put that in a separate library, maybe we could make it easier. And the other thing is, like I said, with the complexity of the pipelines, I'm working with this, but I'm not an expert at all when it comes to the internals of video stuff. I mean, it's complex as hell. So I don't know how predefined pipelines could look like or how to address the complexity of that to make it really easy to use. So that's why, like, I still need to collect ideas or whatever, but that's why I give this talk as well, so people who know better maybe can reach out, give me feedback or give ideas or try it out, tell me how it fails, and however we're going to find the way forward, I think as a community we can bring it further. And then there's other multimedia parts. This is just video. Like for the driving assistant software, that's just good enough because you just need to see something. You wouldn't hear it anyways, so that's not necessary. But still, the question remains, if you want to make it something official, how would we deal with audio in general? Yeah, so I have a couple of apps here. There's no particular selection process. There was no formal proposal that it gets included. I'll tell you about each one a little bit when I get to it. If you want to know more about the apps available, do go to apps.find.io. There are now, I think, 170 open source apps that people have contributed to that repository, and more are coming in. If you've got one that you would like to share, there's a submit button on that website that you should absolutely just tap and put the data in. The first app I wanted to share is, in fact, Supersonic, by Drew, who's one of the contributors to the Find project. This app, I think, has been under development for a few years, and it has a level of polish that I am really enjoying. Working with audio is not easy, and yet somehow this application has made it look pretty seamless. And so it's connecting to a variety of different backends, and it's showing you the collection of audio that you have. You can tap into any one of them, and it's going to start playing. Nice. And the waveform is being sampled and applied to the UI. You can see information about the track that's playing. And then there's so, like, all of your metadata and exploration. Lyrics are in here. I also love that there's visualizations are being added. So if you wanted to see a peak meter, and I play it again, which is pretty cool. And this is all written in Go using the Find toolkit with some custom widgets, much like we saw in some earlier presentations. And we had the fun of presenting this application to Russ Cox as he walked past at GopherCon a couple of weeks ago, because he said he was interested in what the toolkit was capable of. And I was like, oh my goodness. So Drew, Russ, Drew, oh my goodness, have a conversation about this amazing app. Thanks, Drew, for this application. The next one that I wanted to show you is an app that I was also using last week. Yeah, so this next app is much smaller, but it was also present and causing interest at GopherCon. It is a slideshow app that I've put together that uses Markdown to define the slides. And I could just open the GopherCon 2025 slides that I put together for my lightning talk. And this is doing everything from the raw text on the left using mostly built-in widgets, but it also has the ability to play full screen, which is just displayed on the wrong screen. I don't think I can make it display full screen on this because of the conflict between OBS and the slideshow. But those slides will display full screen and give the rendering of a slideshow, tapping through embedded images, lots of content. And one of the things I like about this is the theme ability, using vector graphics to the best asset ability to show it in a really high resolution, whatever the screen, with PDF export, as you'd expect for slideshows. So I wanted to include this simply because people were quite interested in that at the presentation a couple of weeks ago. And lastly, I did mention it very briefly, Aptrix is a sponsor. I showed a screenshot, but I thought, by way of showing what's possible with the toolkit, it's actually quite a cool app as well. So I'm actually just going to open an existing project, but you could create a new app. You could ask for an AI to prompt to generate your application. Here, we're editing a calculator, pretty standard app. It's included in one of the repositories that we have. And you can interact with the visuals. I could decide I want to add a hyperlink into the bottom of the UI. It's going to drop it in down there. It's using a grid layout, so it's evenly spaced. If I'm curious about the code that's generated, we can bring them up alongside each other. And so you can actually learn about how the code is created. It links the UI to the code that's being used under the hood. My equals button here is clearly doing more than just being a button on screen. It has some calculation to do. You can see it's running an evaluate function. And if I'm a developer, or if I want a little bit more power, I could pop into the source code that makes this happen. I have an evaluate function in the code, so you can jump in and out of the graphical representation. If I'm unsure about any part of it, like this new grid container, I can ask for an AI assistant to explain what's going on at that line of code, and that's possibly not very readable, but it's picking out the code and giving you a description about it. So the flow of AI into the application is becoming more natural and more assistive rather than a prompt that generates an application, because the idea is it's a life cycle of code that grows with your product. And naturally, built on top of all of the technologies in the community, find Cross and a few others, when you're ready to deploy your application, it's possible to one tap a button, which isn't visible because I've just realized I'm running the free version and it doesn't have the deploy button, but with a subscription you can tap deploy and it sends out to all different platforms that it understands, which is basically all platforms. If you're interested to learn more, there's a website, there's a free download that you can try out, or just come and chat about it. The reason I particularly like this as an application showing what Find can do is that this window here is actually whatever you want it to be. So it could be showing you a live application or simulating a mobile, and that's using some of the capabilities to have one part of the application controlled independently to the other parts of the application. Cool. Well, hopefully those were some really inspiring applications of the different things going on around the community. I wish we could show more, actually, but there is only limited time, and the budget to get more people here to show you their stuff would probably be a little bit too much.